Yeah. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Can I just have a show of hands of how many people have actually written a web application before?
Okay. Freddie, keep your hands up, actually. How many of you are thinking about moving your application to the cloud? Not straight away, maybe in the next year or so? Okay, that's pretty good. Before I get going, I want to tell you a story. About a year or so ago, when I first started working with Windows Azure, I was actually moving an application. It was an MVC app that I was actually moving across to Azure, and it wasn't all that easy. Firstly, to start with, in my opinion, Azure wasn't mature enough at that stage. The tooling wasn't there, and even the guidance, there wasn't enough guidance available at that point in time to help you move the application across. It was actually a frustrating experience. And when the application actually worked really well on my local machine. And then I started putting it up in Azure, and everything fell over. And it took me a day to find out there was something in my, I think I missed an assembly, and I had some problems with the web config file or something like that. Fast forward to about a year, and it's actually a much better experience now. Azure is up to 1.4.1, and there's a lot of tooling available from Microsoft, from in CodePlex, free tool downloads in CodePlex, and third-party vendors who actually written quite a lot of tools. And if you look at it now, moving your application to Azure is actually quite easy. There are a whole bunch of things that you need to do, but it's still a much better experience. Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mahesh Krishnan. I work as a principal consultant at Redify. And along with John Azaria, we're going to show you in the next 60 minutes or so how you can actually move your application across to the cloud. John and I have been working for about 8 months or so at MYOB, trying to move some of this stuff across to the cloud. John is actually a former Microsoft Blue Badge. He used to work on a lot of projects out at Redmond. I think he's worked on some of the Office products, Excel and Project, is that correct?
That's right.
But I think he once confessed to me, and don't hold this against him, that he was responsible for writing the first prototype of SharePoint. So if you've got someone to blame, you can actually blame him.
Oh, I thank you, Mahesh. Thank you.
I would say the current project that we're actually working at MYOB, it's actually a fairly large project. I would actually say it's probably one of the largest projects in Australia, if not the world. John?
That's right. MYOB has 1 million customers in the Asia, Australia and New Zealand, and we are working with Microsoft quite closely to move their individual databases to the cloud to give them an experience that they couldn't possibly have without it. And so for that reason, we've been quite working with them with the SQL TAP program, SQL Azure TAP program, and so on. And so it's been a pleasure to have Mahesh and the rest of the guys from Redify come by and help us on this endeavor. Mahesh, if you're from Victoria, you've already run into him. He's Mr. .NET User Group. He runs all the sessions and organizes stuff. Celebrated author,
celebrated
speaker,
author
and
stretch.
Life coach. Dummies for Silverlight, wasn't it?
It's Silverlight for Dummies. And yeah, celebrated author is a bit of a stretch. We're not going to be talking about Silverlight today. We're going to be talking about Azure. And the content we're going to talk about is, we're just going to give you a bit of an overview of Azure as such. How many of you attended Stephen Nagy's presentation yesterday on Azure in the morning? Okay, a lot of people who haven't. So this is like a cut-down version of his presentation. The first two slides, it will be a cut-down version of his presentation. So what I actually call like an Azure in a slide. So it's a quick overview for all of those who aren't familiar with Azure. And then what we'll do is we've got an existing application that we've actually written. It's a simple app, a simple web application, ASP.NET web forms application. And then we're going to try and move it across to the cloud. So in doing so, the first thing that we're going to do is it uses SQL Server. So we're going to move that SQL Server database across to SQL Azure. And then we're going to start moving the web application itself. So while we're moving the web application to the cloud, there are a few things that we're going to be doing. In our application, our Contrail application, we've got some access to files and so on. So we're going to try and move it across to blobs. And then we're going to start using things like show you how to hook up session state in ASP.NET. And then finally, we're going to hook up finish off with hooking up with Google and Windows Live ID in our application. So what is Azure? This is my Azure in a slide. It's just a kind of quick overview of what it is. You can think of Azure as broken down into two main parts. One is the stuff that actually does run the code, the compute part. And so the compute part is made up of things like your web role and your worker role. Now, you can think of the web role as nothing more than a web application, but multiple instances of it, something like running your web application in a web farm, so to speak. And your worker role is like running your background task, but again, multiple instances of it. So how many of you actually attended the keynote for the developer track? Okay, if you saw the Pixar example over there, this is what they were doing, was they basically took the task, broken it up, and ran it in multiple instances of the worker role. So when you want to do a lot of things in the background, you use the worker role. It's very similar to running a Windows service. So it's running all the time, but in multiple instances of it. Of course, you know, running code without storing anything is probably not very practical in a lot of cases. So you have two ways of storing it. One is using SQL Azure, and other is Azure Storage. If you've got an existing relational database, something like SQL Server, then it's a natural choice for you to move that across to SQL Azure. Now, SQL Azure is not SQL Server 2008 R2. There are lots of changes. It's kind of like a cut-down version of it. Basically, a version, cut-down version that is highly scalable, you know, redundant, and available in the cloud for you. So there are certain things that are just not available. For example, you know, when you're creating a database in SQL Server 2008, you'd say create database and specify where the database has to reside in the file and so on. You don't specify things like that. There are some DDL commands that are missing there are certain DDL commands that you cannot use on SQL Azure. There are certain T-SQL you cannot use. So there are a whole bunch of differences. But for all practical purposes, if you've got a SQL Server database, you will be able to move it up to Azure and then work around some of those differences. Sometimes you don't work with relational data, and you know, maybe you just want to work with objects. And table storage in Azure Storage actually provides a highly scalable way of storing this data. And if it's non-relational, and it doesn't, you know, that's the way to go. Put it in table storage. There are also other things available in Azure Storage. You've got blobs. If you're working with files, then you can think of blobs as the natural equivalent for it. So you can access a blob through a unique URI. If you want to communicate between multiple roles, say if you want to send a message across to from a web role and a worker role, maybe if you want to initiate a long-running a task or something like that, then you would use queues for it. And queues are part of Azure Storage as well. So we're not going to be touching on table storage and queues in this talk. So we're going to be doing all the other stuff. We won't be hitting on worker roles, but I'll show you an example of where a worker role will be useful in our application as well. Of course, you know, I kind of like oversimplified Azure as such. I mean, you know, Azure in a slide, just four things, and that's not what Azure is all about. There are a whole bunch of other things. You have things like access control. You have app fabrication. You have service bus. You have virtual networks. And, you know, if you've got your on-premise, if you've got some services running on-premise, then you can basically connect it from Azure. And you have content delivery networks. So, and there's a whole bunch of things, and we won't be touching on any of these things in our presentation, except maybe for the first two. We'll use access control to see how you can hook up to Live ID and Google ID and Yahoo ID in this presentation, and we'll also touch upon app fabrication to see how you can actually hook up your session state to start using the caching that is provided in here. So what we're going to do now is we're going to show you the existing application that we have. It's kind of like a contrived application that we put up for this demo. So, John, do you want to talk about this?
Sure. So, it's a fairly contrived application. I haven't obviously heard of Picasa, clearly. We've got a little app that has, you know, albums and allows you to upload some pictures and stuff like that. And then we want to be able to log in. Does this thing have a laser? We want to be able to log in and view our stuff securely. And so it's just a traditional one-page, simple little ASP.NET application. It's not going to win any awards for design or anything, but it is indicative of some of the issues that you're going to face. For example, we're going to upload these images into the database and store them in an image column. It's not what you do in real life, but it's just to demonstrate stuff. And then before we actually render the page, we're going to make sure that the thumbnail and the image are actually rendered out into a file somewhere that you can then refer to from the page. Again, not what you would normally do, but indicative of some of the issues you may face. What would that application kind of look like? It would look like this, right? You'd have a little database up on the top which handled all your authentication stuff. So if you ran ASP.NET Reg SQL, you'd get your ASP.NET DB thing over there. And then we'd have our own little database, which we created with, actually, as it turns out, a couple tables with albums and then pictures and the relationships and all of that lot. And then that file system thing I was telling you about, where the stuff from the database is going to be moved over to the files and stored there. And then there's a web application to rule them all, right, which is going to actually give you the page over there. What we'll do is we'll take it to the cloud in stages. The first thing we'll do is actually move the data to SQL Azure in the cloud and make sure that we have a web application that runs locally talking to SQL Azure in the cloud. Then we'll take the blob storage bring blob storage into the equation and actually move the cached files onto blob storage as well. Then we'll take the app itself onto the cloud. And then finally, we'll get rid of the ASP.NET DB authentication mechanism and replace it with Google so that you have some way of federated authentication onto our application. So we have the little application. Mahesh, if you can just go ahead and hit F5.
Let me switch over. It's going to show up any minute, I think.
I think it's this too.
No.
Is it?
Technical difficulties, ladies and gentlemen. It is function display. All sorted out? No?
No. Wow, that's a pretty cool demo.
All right. While I... Okay.
Woohoo!
All sorted out. Okay, it's a pretty simple web application. It's a typical ASP.NET. So what we've taken is we've taken the standard prototype and made some little changes to it. So if I just hit F5 now, it's just going to run. I can just go login.
So a couple of things to notice, right? One is Cassini is running, so the application is running on 4188. That's just something to keep in mind. And then I've already logged in, and I've created a bunch of images and put them up there, so you have all of those. That's just your reference. Yeah?
Yep, that's right, yep.
So the next thing we're going to do is actually move... Can we switch over to the other one?
Yep.
Yeah, the next thing we're going to do is move the storage thing to Azure.
So the first step, of course, is when you're moving application, when you're starting to create an application to Azure, starting to move, you need to get yourself an Azure subscription. So you can go over to windows.azure.com and get yourself a subscription. Now, getting a subscription and putting all your credit card numbers and everything is going to take a while. So we've already got our subscription. In fact, we're using John's boss's subscription.
Yeah,
so
please don't copy the ideas. Yeah,
I'm
fired.
So. So once you go over to windows.azure.com, and you can there are three things that you need to do. One is you need to create a hosted service. This is where you're going to host your application itself. Then you've got to create a storage account. This is where the blob storage is going to go. And then you're going to go and create a SQL Azure instance. Now, John's gone ahead and started creating a new service account. Now, the URL that you specify over here will be used from your application. So it's got to be unique within cloudapp.net. And you also need to pick the right region or affinity, you know, where your applications are going to be hosted. We actually picked up Southeast Asia, but you know, sometimes America is actually a lot more faster to get to than Southeast Asia. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that when you're actually creating your hosted services, make sure you put all your data and your, you know, your storage account and everything is hosted in the same same region, so that, you know, they're all talking to each other, they're all in the same subnet, maybe even in the same rack or something like that in the cloud. So hit OK, John. And this is going to go ahead and create it. The second step is to go and create a service account. So it's very similar step. You go and you need put in a unique URL over here as well. And like I said earlier, choose the same region that you're going to host it in. And once this is done, the third step is to go ahead and create a database account. There are a couple of things that you need to remember while you're creating. First thing is you've got to specify an admin login and password. Now, this is the account that you'll use to connect to the database. You cannot use something like an SA or admin. It doesn't let you do it. But, yeah, pick a unique username and password. And once it's done, it actually asks you, hey, you know, I want to put a firewall around it, and just let me know which IP addresses can have access to it. If you tick this checkbox over here, it basically allows, if you're hosting any, it basically allows any application that is hosted in Windows Azure to actually talk to it. So you may want to do it if you're hosting your application in Windows Azure itself. And in our case, because we're going to be running, connecting it from our local machine over here, we may want to add the IP address so that the firewall can allow this to access it as well. So that's what John is doing. It's all good. So once this is done, the next step is pretty much to migrate you know, our existing SQL Server database across. Now, what we are going to be using is we're going to be using a tool that is available on CodePlex. It's called it's SQL Azure Migration Wizard. Now, there's more than one way to skin a cat. I mean, there are, you know, you can use a variety of applications to migrate your schema. And you can use something like SSIS, for instance, if you wanted to. Microsoft have now got something called a Backpack. That's a funny name. It's you know, it's spelled B-A-C-P-A-C, and you can use backpacks to also migrate your schema as well as your data across to the cloud. But that isn't CTP at the moment. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to be using SQL Azure Migration Wizard. It is a download on CodePlex. We'll put up links to all these things on our blog, which I'll mention at the end of the presentation. But once you actually start up SQL Azure Migration Wizard, you can actually pick the source database, which is what John is doing now. And then you also need to pick the target database. So you've got to put the connection string to do this. This actually generates a SQL statement. What it does is that, like I said earlier, there is a slight difference between some of the T-SQL commands or the DDLs that are generated for that you use for SQL Server and SQL Azure. So if you went into Management Studio in SQL Server and said, hey, generate the script for this, and you run on it, it will not work because certain things aren't supported. What the script does, it actually basically strips away all those all those statements or things that aren't compatible, and it gives you a nice script that you can actually run. So the next step is to actually specify the database that you're actually migrating it to. There's actually a trick where you can pick up the server name and so on. If you go to the Windows Azure portal, and if you select that's actually the database name. Notice that it's kind of like it's not a GUID or anything, but it's kind of like hard to remember. So it's best to actually paste this and put it up in our connection string over there. Once you do this, what it's going to do is it'll start running the script, and it'll also run BCP, which loads all the data that's there in an existing database up to SQL Azure at this point. Now, because in our application, this is going to take maybe a couple of minutes because we don't have that much of data, and depending on the bandwidth that we have, this may actually not be too bad.
Yeah, but we still have to copy the ASP.NET DB.
Yeah, so we still need to copy the ASP.NET database where we actually store our authentication information and so on. So we're going to skip that. So it's going to be the same action done. So we're going to use an existing database that we've already already created. So the first thing that we need to do, of course, is to we've got to go change our connection string in our config file. So which is what John is actually doing.
Yeah. So this is actually, I just created the web config before, and this is actually talking to the database in the cloud. Huh, strange enough. Very cool.
Now, one thing that you got to remember, if you hit F1, it's just going to run. And right now, we actually have our application running
locally
in IIS or in Cassini, and it's actually talking to the database up in the cloud. Now, one other change that you may want to do in your own applications is to start building some retry logic around some of your SQL statements. So, you know, in the cloud, you want your application to be more resilient. You know, Microsoft may decide to move the connection, you know, they may decide to move your hosted application from one machine to another or something like that. Your connections may become stale and so on. So you got to work on your retry logic. So just keep that in mind. So, So if you look at our diagram over here, we've actually done our first bit. So we've actually moved our database across to the cloud. Everything else is actually sitting locally, and that's what we're going to do next.
That's right. Awesome. So let me ask you another question. How many of you have written web applications that run in a server farm environment? Cool. So you'll readily appreciate that there's the necessity to make sure that any state that you store isn't instance specific, because quite likely that when two requests come in for something, that they're going to be served by different machines, and if your state is instance specific, your host. So to support that, Microsoft has a fully distributed object repository which you can use as your state management stuff for things like files, images, media, that kind of thing, and also a quick and clean way of actually moving your sessions as well to the to a session state manager which is shared across multiple instances. So the blob storage piece, what we've done is, do you want to show the code actually?
Yeah. Okay.
So you remember the old picture, we had the files actually being created, so we have you know, a little piece of code over here that ensures that a file exists a little bit over here, there you go. Further down. That's fine. So, in fact, this is the thing that ensures that the thumbnail is created, because it ensures an image exists already, and then we have something that runs a resizer and creates a thumbnail image on the fly. So this piece is obviously going to break in the cloud, because if I have more than one instance, the page will get rendered. It will say, okay, I've ensured that the file exists. And the next instance that responds to a query will say, okay, the file exists. Here's the URL to the file, but the file won't be there. So what we've done is we've already written the thing that moves it to the blob. And if you can go down a little bit. Yeah, there you go. Sweet. Exactly the same kind of code, right? Except that instead of using the file storage, we've gone ahead and hooked up our stuff to use the same code.
Want to scroll down?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, we've used the same, we've actually set up the cloud storage account. And you remember when we first went in and we set up the hosted service and then a storage account? Well, that storage account is what we're going to use to store all the blobs and refer to them. The blob store is basically a file system with a REST head. If you can think about it like that, you can use REST APIs to push files and things onto the blob, or you can actually use a handy little tool that Microsoft's given us, a little class that allows us to interact with the blob just as an object rather than having to deal with all the REST stuff. Well, what have we done here?
So what I'm going to do next is
Right. Let's go ahead and move the session state as well to the cloud. In order to do that, we come back to the Azure portal and click on the service bus and create ourselves a cache namespace. So So if you go in here and just make sure that we use the right subscription.
Okay.
Southwest. Yeah. Right. So what this will do is create a location in the cloud which can be shared across all the instances of your Azure application. And it'll give us a mechanism to, well, it's quite handy. It gives you all the XML that you need to put into your web config so that your application can now talk to that session state provider instead of the local one. And it's fairly straightforward.
It looks straightforward. That, but there's something wrong with the page, I think.
Yeah. It's taking a while. Well, look, it's what we should do is just go back to the code. Yeah, just add the column. You've got choose columns.
Go back to the cache.
You've got choose columns over there, which you don't need.
No, it's nothing here. Don't worry, it's all there.
Yeah, okay.
All right.
Let's just go back to the code.
We're just going to move right along.
Show them the web config file.
Yeah.
This is the stuff that is generated by the application. And we copy that, and we paste that into the configuration session to say, hey, when someone asks for a session in the code, what I really mean by session is actually that data cache client, which has the URL appropriately set up to cos204demo.cache.windows.net over there. And that will allow us to have a fully distributed mechanism for storing the session object so that every instance in Azure can use it, and also the blob storage, which is over here.
This is a blob storage.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, that blob storage over there basically says, hey, when I ask for the blob, use that so that all the instances can actually go ahead and talk to that.
Yep.
Now, if you go to the application, Mahesh, and hit F5, you should actually get a kind of strange beast. The app's running over here, but the storage is in the cloud somewhere in Singapore, and the blobs in Singapore as well. So we take the images from the database, we stick it into the blob, and then it's going to take a little bit of time. But then when you're done with it and you view source on the page, you'll realize that all the image source tags point to a real RESTful blob URL, which I think is pretty cool.
I think our connection is actually pretty slow today.
Yeah.
But just a couple of things. This still hasn't come up for some reason.
I think we should just...
Yep. There you go.
Yeah, so you just click on the view client.
So this is what John was talking about earlier. If you clicked on the view client configuration, it will provide you with the actual XML that you can actually include in your, there you go. You can actually include the actual, you can cut and paste this and put it into your configuration file. So it actually tells you, hey, this is the section that you need to include if you're putting it in, if you want to use it for a session state and so on.
Cool.
Now, another thing I want to point out.
Hang on, let's just show them this. So if you view the page source now on that page, it should actually show us. Man, why is view source taking so long? That's something bizarre.
You should have run it off your 3G card.
Thank you. Yeah, there you go. Did you switch over? Or?
Now, I just want to show one other thing. Remember in your configuration file over here, we actually had this blob connection string. Just to tell you how to get the blob connection string, you can actually go over to your actual hosted service over here, in your storage accounts, rather. And in the properties over here, which is actually showing up empty.
Silverlight, man, I'm telling you.
Is it?
Maybe they
bizarre.
Should read your book, yeah?
Anyway. This is the demo gods not being happy with you. Right. If you actually go over there, you will see a link that actually says primary key and secondary key. You click on the primary key, it gives you it's kind of like a username and password to connect to the blob storage. So your username not really username. Your username is really your the name that you set up your storage account with. So in our case, we use tdemo 2011 or something like that. And then the storage key would be the primary or the secondary key that would be available in that link, which is not showing up for some strange reason.
Right. But anyway, like I said earlier, you can actually see that the source is now pointing to a location in the blob storage, and the page actually runs. It's a bit slow, but it'll work. Let's switch over. So what have we done so far? We've actually taken the blob storage now and moved it to the cloud. So if you think about it, right, this is in Singapore. That's in Singapore. That's in this room over here. So you expect things to be a bit slow when it comes to actually working stuff, because you're going to open a stream that starts there and ends there, and you're going to marshal all the data through this thing. So it's only logical that this thing next needs to move to the cloud next. So in order to do that, I'm going to hand over to Mahesh over here.
So if you're moving, you know, we've done everything. The next step is, you know, logically to move our web application to the cloud or to Azure. But if you are doing development work, then and you want to debug it and you want to set breakpoints, inspect some values and so on, it is going to be inherently very, very difficult if your application is sitting in the cloud. So what you really need is a local environment where you can actually do all your work. So what Microsoft has given us, as part of the Azure framework, you get a Windows environment where you can actually emulate both your compute and your storage emulator. With the compute emulator, you'd be able to run multiple instances of your application, of your web role or your worker role, and you can put breakpoints on it and, you know, debug it and inspect values and so on and so forth. You also have a storage emulator, which we're not using in our presentation today, but it's exactly it's very similar to your compute emulator, except that you can store your blobs, your tables, and your queues. You can put it in your environment. And this will basically store things in your SQL Server, local SQL Server database, and it'll basically surface that up as you know, in the REST API that John was telling about earlier. So to actually move your application to Azure, there are, you know, it's quite straightforward. I mean, you move your you create a new Azure project in Visual Studio. There is actually a new project that John will show in a minute. So to do this, you know, basically assuming that you installed your Azure SDK. Once you do that, you'll get a new project type in Visual Studio. And then you can just basically hit run and, you know, start running it in your compute emulator. We can eventually deploy to the cloud. There are a couple of things that you need to do, and we'll actually show it along the way, apart from this, that requires a bit of a code change. One is in your web application, you got to create a class called WebRole. And I'll talk about that in a minute. And you can initialize all your, it's very similar to your global ASAX file. So this is where you put all the initialization stuff. So when the cloud starts up your app, you put all the initialization stuff in there, like your diagnostics and so on. And then, you know, you also got to move your configuration across from your web to your service configuration. I'll come to that in a minute as well. John is actually ready to jump in and show how to move to create a new Azure project. So
yeah, just one more thing. Mahesh, you have to make sure that when we have any libraries that you're going to use in the cloud, make sure you set them as copy to local.
That's right.
But anyway, so if you install Windows Azure runtime and Windows Azure SDK 1.1, you'll magically 1.4. Get this 1.4.1. Sorry, in history now. You'll get this cloud project, which allows you to say, "Hey, I'm going to write something to the cloud," right? And what it'll do is, and this is interesting because you can actually see things growing over here. Different types of web roles and worker roles that are provided by Microsoft. So as stuff matures, you're going to get newer roles that are going to be available. We're actually not going to add any roles here because we already have the web application. We're going to treat that as a role. So to do that, what we'll do is we'll just click through and then create a web role project from something that's in the solution already. And that's just that one. Pick that project. And if you look now here, you get the role configuration stuff that tells you about how you want this role to actually be deployed into Azure. Mahesh?
Yeah, so the couple of things to note over here. One is that instance count over there. Now, this actually tells you how many instances of the web role that you want deployed when you first deploy to the application, to the cloud. You can actually change this later at runtime. You know, this is the whole, if you want to scale up your application, you should be able to kind of like increase this. The second thing over here is the VM size. There are a whole bunch of VM sizes that actually tells you in what kind of, how many cores and how much memory you want to run this application in each and every single instance of them. So if you're putting up one tip is that if you're putting up your application in production, you probably wouldn't use an extra small. So you may want to use as much processing power as you can. And you want to bump up the instance count. You need at least two to meet your SLAs so that if one machine goes down, at least the other one takes over. So you would at least have an instance count of two. At this point, this is all the changes that that is needed. You can just hit F5 at this point, and the application will just run. And notice that when you're actually running the application now, rather than using Cassini or running in IIS, what actually happens is that it's running in the Windows Azure Compute Emulator. And that's the IP address it's going to start up in. John, can you click on the Sharpix step one over there? No, sorry. Go back to the screen.
Oh.
Just to show them how the instances are actually running.
Oh, okay. Cool. Yeah, sure.
So notice it actually shows 0 and 1. That is pretty much running a virtual machine inside the compute emulator.
So again, there you go. It's not Cassini running anymore. It's actually the compute emulator running there. We can try and log in. And it should still work. Now, this is kind of a weird beast again. It's our app, not running in Cassini, running in compute emulator on this machine, but talking to the
both the database and the cloud. And
yeah, so it's going to take some time. Let's move on.
Now, we typically, whenever we write a web application, we put settings in our config file. Things that, we think, we may want to change this thing at runtime maybe. And so we put all these settings in our web config file. So what happens is when you hit the deploy, which we'll show in a minute, when you hit the deploy button from Visual Studio, it's going to package this up and it's going to deploy it up in the cloud. So the whole application, including the web config, is packaged together. So if you wanted to change some settings, so you decide, the retry count that I had or the database connection, I'm going to put it to another connection. If you wanted to change that setting, then you would have to redeploy the whole application itself, which is probably not such a good idea. So what you can actually do in an application in a Azure application is to put all that information up in the settings over there in a service configuration file. So currently, the only setting that is there is the diagnostics information that's up over here. But, John, if you open
We've already gone ahead and done this stuff for another project. So
what we've done in our example is we've moved all the connection strings for our database and the blob connection string, we've moved it up to the service configuration file. So once we actually deploy it to the when sitting in Azure, and if you want to change any of the configuration information, you can just go ahead and change it over there without having to redeploy. And just a word of warning, every time you actually deploy to Azure, it's going to take about 15 minutes for the whole deployment to actually finish.
At the very least.
So, there is one way around it in the development environment. I'll talk about it in a minute. But first, what we're going to try to do is try and publish the application across to Azure.
Hang on. We'll publish the one that we just created, yeah?
Yep. We're going to publish the one that we just created.
That's right. So, go on.
Yeah, the first thing that you need to do when you're publishing is you need to authenticate yourself. I mean, you don't want to let anyone to go and publish it to your website. So the way we do it is authentication using a certificate. So you can go ahead and create a certificate. If you don't have one, you can just go ahead and create a certificate right out of Visual Studio. And once it's created, you need to copy the full path of it and go over to the portal. And in the portal, there's a section called Management Certificates. This basically tells, hey, anyone who talks to me using any of these certificates, give them full access to the cloud. So John's going to go ahead and add it over here. at certificate, and just browse and.
Okay, so I've already done it. It's there. It's this one.
Okay, so now that the certificate is already there, you should be able to deploy it to the cloud. So if we now the other thing that you need to do is pick the subscription ID, which is over here.
It's basically a GUID.
So although you may have a management certificate, you're going to say, hey, which subscription you're actually going to deploy to. So you put that information up as well. And once it authenticates you, authentication fail.
Well, that's epic fail. We'll create a new certificate there. Simpler.
Okay, we'll just go through this process all over again.
What can I say? Didn't really expect that to.
So once you actually do this, it'll ask you from Visual Studio, hey, where do you want to deploy it to? Do you want to deploy it to production or staging? Typically you may want to deploy it to staging first, and then there is a VIP swap. So it literally swaps it over from production to staging in one go with the click of a button. But in our case, we'll just deploy it to production.
It's working with Azure is an exercise in patience. So,
So it's click the production, and that's the storage account. Now, this is where it'll actually upload the package to before it's actually deploying. And so pretty much everything else is. Now, if you worked with web applications, you can actually do a publish from your web app, and it basically copies your entire web application across to another site. And you can actually do that with Azure as well. So it now supports from 1.4.1, it actually supports web deploy. So it should be able to deploy your application across to the cloud. But there is a catch, though. The first thing is that because it's not packaged up, if you actually reimage the machine, the changes are actually lost. Plus, it uses remote desktop to do it. So what it does is it actually does a remote desktop in the machine and copies all the files across individually to the folder where the application exists. And it does it only for one instance. So you need to do it only for one instance. And to set up remote desktop, you need to add another certificate, which is what John is doing now. So he's gone ahead and created a new remote desktop certificate. And once he types in an admin, like a username and password, so one tip that I'll actually say when you're actually specifying this, make sure that you set your account expiration date to sometime in the future, just not like a couple of months. Because if you've got a long project, it's going to get out of date soon, and you've got to start making these changes quite frequently. So once you do that, you should be able to hit on that enable web deploy for web roles checkbox and hit publish. But you also need to upload the remote desktop certificate in the portal.
So
are you going to?
Yeah, we can do that. Do it quickly.
So the first thing, of course, is he needs to export it. Now, this is actually a PFX file, not a certificate file. So it exports the private key as well. Putting the password. It's a very secure 4-letter password. Yeah.
Trust me.
And so it's basically uploaded it. Now, if you hit the publish button in Visual Studio, that will basically go ahead and publish it. And this will take about anywhere between 15 to 20 minutes to deploy. So what we're going to do is, rather than wait for 15 minutes, we're going to jump in and show an existing application that we've already uploaded to the cloud. John?
Yeah. Isn't that yours? Actually, this one. We're going to switch over to this.
Yeah. But before we do that, I can actually show you a couple of things. What we've done now is we've moved our database across to the cloud. We've moved the file system access into blob storage and removed it across to Azure as well. And we've also moved the web application across to Windows Azure. Have you got an application that you want to quickly fire up and show that you've already deployed to?
Yeah, no.
Oh, we'll do it at the very end. Okay.
So far we've actually basically done everything that we had before. Now we get to the cool stuff, right? Something new. Working in the whole cloud and Web 2.0 environment, the whole idea of having to create a new password and username for your site is so 1990-something, right? You don't want to do that. You got other guys who've invested hideous amounts of money to make sure that identities are protected and all of that. You offload all of the identity management stuff to somebody who's good at it, like Google or Windows Live ID, right? So what we can do is we're going to start by trying to take our application, and because it's already up on the Azure infrastructure, it's up in the cloud, and we can actually configure these identity providers to talk to your application that's running in the cloud. And Windows Azure makes it very easy to do that. It's fairly straightforward to configure your application to do precisely that. So we'll go back to the Windows Azure portal and set up a couple of identity providers, bind it to, give it some information about our little application and say, hey, use our application will use you to identify its users. And so you tell our application, please use those identity providers to provide your identity for you. So what we can do is click on the service bus access control and caching over there. And that will give us the ability to create a namespace for access control. Again, set up this. This doesn't have to be in the same region, but it's helpful if it is. Subscription, different subscription.
This is a bug. Every time I actually
I'm telling you, man, they should have read that book of yours. Right. Now, so we've created a namespace in the cloud, and what that tells us is that, okay, well, we're going to provide access control from Azure. We have to set that up now to bind the identity provider on the one end with our application on the other. So there's got to be some information that needs to flow both ways. How many of you have done anything with claims-based authentication? Cool. Thank you, Bill. Yeah. So what we're going to do is actually provide that. I mean, when you click on identity providers, you'll get Windows Live ID for you already pre-configured. And there are several other providers that you can use. So, for example, you can have your own Active Directory provider over there. But you've got to customize the identity provider to play nice in this game, right? So there's some pre-configured ones. There's Yahoo, Google, and Windows Live ID. We'll just go with Google for the moment. And once you do that, we have both the identity providers set up. Now, the relying party is actually our application, right? So we need to set up this thing so that you say, hey, I'm going to be using those guys, so here's some information about me. In this case, we want to actually set it up so that our local application on this machine is going to talk to the identity provider. You'll need to put that port in there.
Yep.
And so how is this going to work, right? When we go into the landing page of the app, you'll recognize that it's completely different. It's actually going to give us a landing page that has links to the identity providers to allow you to authenticate yourself. You click on one of those, it goes off, authenticates, and then we want to say where does it come back to when it's successful, and that's this piece over here.
Sorry, right? Let me just do this. I typed it in the wrong place.
Yep. Now, we set up some rule groups that tell us what are the claims that are going to be passed around. And you can generate the default ones, which basically give you, for Google and Live ID, the claims that are going to be passed through from the providers. So you can look at the name being passed through on Google and the name identifier being passed through on Live ID to our application. We just use the default one for the moment. And then figure out how to integrate this into our applications. If you click on that, you'll be able to see that there is a Federation, a AWS Federation metadata link that you can use. Now, in order to actually use this in our application, you need Windows Identity Framework, both the runtime and the SDK installed on your box. Put those on, and you'll get, when you right-click on the project, that add SDS reference over there magically appears. In effect, what you're going to tell Windows Identity Foundation here is that, hey, I'm going to be using that metadata to talk to my application and secure it. So we'll put our application URI, and that's it. And then
it's going to give warning that it's not over HTTPS. Just ignore this for the moment.
And use an existing SDS, which will give us, make sure that we have that thing. And then just click through. You won't do this in a production environment, right? You'll want to actually harden the thing up a little bit. So you'll provide certificates and all of that. We're not going to do any of that a lot. Then we go in here, and we have to mumble something to make sure that it works. There's an incantation here. Now, the Windows identity model puts all of that lot in, so you don't have to worry about that. And that effectively says, hey, use that access control URL to identify users to my account. And the trusted issuer is actually that.
And that one over there as well. Okay. And
so, the incantation to mumble is, we haven't put it in, have we?
It's there in the other
That's right. So what we'll do is we'll punt on this, and we'll show your application's already working. It's step three.
Yeah, just quickly show you that other piece of thing that they need to add, which is this HTTP runtime request validation.
That's right. So just make sure that you stick that in there. It'll make your life a little easier. Because otherwise, this super secure environment will start whinging about something or the other.
Yeah, so you need to add that as well. So what I'm going to do now is we're going to hit F5 and run this.
Just pick three. And so again, here, this hasn't been deployed yet. The other deployment is still going on. As you can see, it's going to take some time over there. But our local application now is still running in Compute Emulator. But you'll get this landing page given to you. So you can go in. I mean, obviously, there's a little bit more code involved, right? You need to go in and actually remove all the stuff that referred to the old ASP.NET DB. So you'll actually comment out all those configuration providers for your identity and all of that, authentication providers and stuff like that. Just sign in and you can go.
So notice it's actually asking for more information from Google account?
So this is the redirection that our app says to Google, hey, I need to be identified by you. Google says, let me ask the user whether you're okay. And that happened just now. And now you logged in there. That's come in here. We've got John Azariah, which I never put in anywhere. That's my name, and that's coming from my Google account. And I've authenticated myself, and I'd previously put some stuff under that account in there, and you've got the pictures working over there. Now, if we actually deployed this application to the cloud, we would get the ability to actually have Google talk to the remote application, and everything would just work. So the data's in the cloud already. We could get the app in the cloud as well. And we'd be golden.
All right, thanks, John. And I'll switch over. So if you look at the application itself, I mean, what we've done is we first started off and moved the database across. Then we moved the blob. And we moved the web application across to the cloud. And finally, we moved the authentication stuff. So we showed the demo. Just to summarize what we did in this presentation, I kind of like gave you a brief introduction to Azure, what I call an Azure in a slide. and then showed you the little sample application that we built, standard ASP.NET web forms app. And then we migrated the database across using the SQL Azure Migration Wizard. And once we had all the data up, then we decided to pick some of the stuff in our application that shouldn't have been written the way it was in the first place, you know, access to file storage and so on. So we kind of like moved that up, put it in the blob storage. And then once all that was done, we fixed all the configuration settings in our application. We moved it up to we also changed the sessions state provider to use the app fabrication in Azure. And then finally, once all was that, we actually moved the application itself to the cloud. Once we did that, we also hooked up our authentication to start using ACS from Azure. So we were able to hook up Live ID and Google ID to it. So if you're interested in knowing more about it, we're going to put up our slides and steps and code. It's going to be posted in the blog. So wait for it till tonight when it's all completed. And we're going to cross-post it to both our blogs. That's John's blog over there, Scrum of One, and mine is blogage.wordpress.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. And before I open up for questions, make sure you fill out your... There you go. You got that? And... yeah, so make sure you fill in the eval forms, and if you want us to come over next year and do another talk, you know, make sure you give us some really good marks. Shameless pitch. Yeah, so just opening up for any questions that you may have. Yes?
Is there a provision to encrypt the service configuration file?
So the question was, is there a provision to encrypt the service configuration file? No, there isn't. So So currently, well, so I'd say the answer is kind of like there's no built-in mechanism, but you can always encrypt your string that you put in the service configuration and then do it. So the answer is it doesn't encrypt the whole file directly, but you can get around by encrypting the string that you put in the configuration file. Anyone else? Yes?
When you were deploying that, you could choose between the stage and the production environment. What's the actual difference between those?
Yep. The question was, what's the difference between the staging and production? Now, the staging is pretty much a staging environment. What it does is when you deploy it to it, it deploys to a GUID. And you know, you saw that cloudapp.net? It actually puts it with a GUID in front of it, and that is subject to change. So you can effectively put it in staging, do all your testing in staging, and then there is a swap button in the management portal, and then you click on it, and then whatever you deployed on staging goes over to the production, and you know, it does the swap. It does a virtual IP swap, as they call it. Yes?
You showed the integration with Windows and Google ID. Is there any resources available if I want to put in the OpenID integration?
There are some people who have actually done OpenID, and if you just Google, you'll actually find some links to it.
Well, you can get back to us. You know, you send us a mail, and we'll get back to you with some more resources on that.
Okay, yes? Awesome. Sorry, I didn't...
You said it takes 15, 20 minutes to deploy.
Yep.
Would an existing production app go offline?
So the key to that is to actually do multiple instances. So the question was, will the app actually go down when you're doing a deploy, because it's going to take about 20 minutes? And the answer is, if you're doing an in-place upgrade, it actually doesn't do it. So it'll do it from one instance to another. So you'll still be okay. So that is the recommended way of doing it. The other way is, of course, you could put it to production, to staging, and then you do the swap.
Yes.
Yep.
Is there a provision for differences in your config between the staging and production if they've got that switch option? Like, is there a way to have like a diff set between them that gets applied when you swap it over or anything?
There's no script that you can actually run as part of the staging, as part of the swap at the moment. So the staging kind of like reflects production environment. So it's got to have the same production database.
Yeah. Treat staging as production with a hidden URL. Right. So when you push stuff out to staging, it's a hidden URL that no one else gets to see until you actually swap over.
So it's not a staging database, it's just staging.
It's staging to a real application. It's just that you haven't shared the URL to anyone.
Okay, so and
that's right.
Yes?
Is there a provision to create an MSI for the web?
Okay, the question is there a provision to create an MSI? Now, the way we actually do it is, you know, we showed in our application, you know, we're just doing it from Visual Studio. But what we've done in our projects is as part of our build, we actually do the deploy. And we use PowerShell scripts to do it. So there is no MSI. I suppose you could actually build it in MSI and hook up some stuff. But, yeah, it's just a lot more easy to use PowerShell scripts to deploy it. Any other questions? Yep.
During the setup, you were able to set the instances and the size of the projects. Is that how we do that? The developer sets that?
Yeah, the question was, do you actually set the instance size and the number of instances? And is that something a developer actually does? Now, the number of instances, I mean, typically what you would do is, the way we actually do is we have our automation scripts that actually allows us to actually put everything up in the cloud. And the people who are actually deploying it to production, I mean, we don't have the certificates to deploy to production. The people, the ops people will have that. But the thing that you can actually do is you can, because Azure actually supports scaling up and scaling down and so on, you should be able to, the ops people will also be able to change the number of instances after it's actually been deployed. If you don't have any other questions?
One more. Just one more.
So there is, so the question was, what about reporting? I mean, it's kind of like an open-ended question. There is, I don't know what you mean by reporting, as in there is also SQL SSRS, and there is a reporting equivalent in Azure. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes.
There is. So, yeah, so there is a reporting equivalent in the cloud for it.
Can you deploy the reporting service and deploy
that? Yes, you can. Although, just to admit, I haven't played around much with it, but, yeah, it is available. Yes, last question. Yep, it's the same question that the other person actually asked, whether you can actually have a different database connection in your, for you when you deploy to staging. And the answer is no. It's almost like a reflection of production. So you point it to your production database at the moment.
So what was the best way to get around that? Did you set up the production settings in your service configuration?
Before you hit the swap button, you can go to your service configuration file and then change it. I suppose you can also script it if you wanted to. Okay, that's all, folks. Call it a wrap. Thanks.
Thank you.